So text 114, continuing with the king. Let him place a company of soldiers commanded by a trusty officer in the midst of 2, 3, 5, or hundreds of villages to be protection of the kingdom, to be a protection of the kingdom. Let him appoint a lord over each village, as well as lords of 10 villages, lords of 20, lords of 100, and lords of 1,000. The lord of 1 village himself shall inform the lord of 10 villages of the crimes committed in his village, and the ruler of 10 shall make his report to the ruler of 20. But the ruler of 20 shall report all such matters to the lord of 100, and the lord of 100 shall himself give him information to the lord of 1,000. Those articles which the villagers ought to furnish daily to the king, such as food, drink, and fuel, the lord of 1 village shall obtain. The ruler of 10 villages shall enjoy 1 kula, as much land as suffices for 1 family. The ruler of 25 kulas, the superintendent of 100 villages, the revenues of 1 village. The lord of 1,000, the revenues of 1 town. So, here is that the king is going to keep in contact with the whole system by having somebody under him in the different positions. So there's going to be a head of a village, and that village then will report to those above him, and this way it'll come up to the king. And Bhishmadeva explains this in the Mahabharata, that they have the representatives, and it just keeps going up in this pyramid like this until it gets to a group at the lower court. And the lower court then informs the king and the ministers what's going on in the kingdom. And then the king and the ministers then take proper action, whatever must be done. So then, for maintenance, those who means... So then, each one of these, the things that the villagers, they will be giving to the king, then that would be given to the head of the village. Then the head of 10, they'll get as much as will land, and that will suffice for a family. So they get that much. Then for the 25, kul means 100 villages, then he will get the revenue of 1 village. And the lord of 1,000 villages, then the revenues of 1 town. And then, like this, then they have to pay, then they have to collect the taxes, and they have to see that the taxes are given up to the king, so the revenues are there. So this way they are maintained they're taken care, yes, by the tax that's there. So they must be taken care of. So here. Says here, those articles which the villagers ought to furnish daily to the king, such as food, drink, and fuel, the lord of 1 village shall obtain. So it appears that the villagers in the village will supply enough for him to maintain himself. Like that. While the ruler of 10 villages will get how much land is needed to take care of his whole family. So he'll get that. So it seems that when you get up higher, that's when you're starting to get bigger revenues. So now this means that they're there to protect, right? So this is all after 114. Let him place a company of soldiers commanded by a trusty officer in the midst of 2, 3, 5, or hundreds of villages to be a protection of the kingdom. Yeah. So then you're going to have the soldiers there to see that the protection is going on. There's no thievery and different things. You're going to have the heads of the villages who are going to be watching what's going on. Then they are collecting whatever revenues are there, and then those are paid up to the king. 120. The affairs of these officials, which are connected with their villages and their separate businesses, another minister of the king shall inspect, who must be loyal and never remiss. So it's all these officials are there, but then there should be a minister of the king who will check to see that all this is going on nicely. So in the kingdom, there's always double checking. You have the king has made this line of heads of villages that come up. Then you're going to have another minister that he's outside the hierarchy there that is going to check that they are all doing what they're supposed to be doing. That the proper taxes are going on, people are being taken care of, the people are actually able to do their job. Like that. He said he must be loyal and never remiss. Yeah, and that also means like if they argue amongst each other. You know, one says the tax should be this much, you gave this much last year, and they say, well, this year the harvest was not so great, so we can't give that much. They say, no, no, you're just trying to keep more for yourself, and like this, so they start fights like this. A minister outside of their line should take care of it, like this. And in each town, 121, and in each town let him appoint one superintendent of all affairs, elevated in rank, formidable, resembling a planet amongst the stars. So in the town, then there must also be a superintendent. So those were all the villages. Then you have the towns, right? So you have those head of each village and then that hierarchy going there, and then you have the towns, and there should be a superintendent of that. And he should be, it seems here, elevated in rank, formidable. So they should be much more able. 122. Let that man always personally visit by turns all those other officials. Let him properly explore their behavior in their districts through spies appointed to each. So in the town, then you have all these villages will come up, and then the person in the town, he must check whatever's going on around in the villages. Whatever's his district, he must be able to check. So personally, it says, and by turns, all those other officials, means the officials of 1,000 villages, the officials of one village, he must be seeing the whole thing. At the same time, he should be watching everything through spies. Because what you get from, you talk to somebody, you may get one thing, and then what the spy is another. But the point is very important, is that there must be personal check. Because the point is, a spy is a spy, right? He's not elevated in rank, right? He may be clever, but generally he's a common person, you know, generally a very common person. He has to be common enough no one notices. If you have a high-ranking officer, you know, milling around and hanging outside places, everybody will notice him, right? Some very aristocratic person hanging around, people will notice him. You have a very ordinary, like, person, no one notices him. Somebody looks like a laborer, you know, or everybody just knows him. He's one of the laborers around. But he is connected with this whole system. Then he just informs what's going on with the king to his superintendent and that. So just hearing from spies is not enough because the spy doesn't necessarily have good quality. So he can also misjudge what he sees. This is a major problem with the modern bureaucracies, is that they will misjudge the information because where they got it from may not be very good. Like that, it's something that I don't know if you've all gone through, but I think it's about seventh grade in America that they introduced the phenomenon maybe it was fifth grade. But whatever. You sit all the students in the room, all 30 of them in a circle, right? Then the teacher sits at one point. And then the person on the teacher's right, they say, write down something. And then tell that into the ear of the person on their right. And this way it goes all the way around the room. Each one tells the next one. And then the one on the one on the left of the teacher is supposed to write down what they have heard. What they were told. then you compare the two papers. And generally, always, you know, it's like apples and oranges. They have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Like this. I've heard some places in the world call it Chinese whispers. Like that. In America, I'm not sure what they call it. The acharyas call it prajalpa. But, you know, so this is the thing, is that you hear it goes around. It doesn't mean that it'll actually have any meaning. So this one's heard from this, seen from that. Because the point is that, yeah, it's fine. What have you heard? What have you seen? Oh, I heard this. I saw this. That's all. So they can't. One has to go personally to see also. Because the person who is in charge must be here, elevated in rank, formidable, resembling a planet amongst the stars. That means he's very qualified. So then that qualified person can go, and for himself he has to judge also. So he's heard information, then he judges. And then like that, it works. I mean, so many details are there in the art of dealing with spies and all that. But the point is that there must be checking. Just sitting in an office and just hearing whatever you hear and making decisions simply based on that and not checking personally is not a really good position. Kshatriyas always check. That's the point. The Kshatriyas are checking. Others may not. Kshatriyas check. Like that. The king always, you'll find, he himself even personally goes out and sees what's going on in the, you know, the main city where he sits in the capital and goes around in the different places. He goes incognito. They dress up in different ways, go here and there, and they check what's going on like that. Otherwise, you know, first hand, I mean, just by hearing, they won't get, or if they go as the king, they won't get. They go incognito, then they hear. Ramachandra, that's how he heard that one. Forget what it was, washerman or something, and he was, his wife had been gone for one night, and when she came back, then she had so many excuses, and he says, "No, listen, I'm not like Ramachandra. I just take my wife back, and she spent time somewhere else. You know, it's like that. You know." And so when he heard this, that a washerman was saying this comment about the king, that means there's no esteem for the king. So this is very bad in the kingdom. So that's then Ramachandra went back and then had Sita Devi sent to the forest. She stayed with Valmiki Muni. Because, you know, the people, this is an uncultured person, but still the respect for the king must be there. So he heard that because he was out incognito going around. Otherwise he wouldn't hear such things. No one would say it to him. 123. For the servants of the king who are appointed to protect the people generally become knaves who seize the property of others. Let him protect his subjects against such men. Yeah. So here it says generally become. In other words, it's rare to find someone who will just maintain properly in their position. Therefore, you have to have others who are always checking to make sure that everything is going nicely. 124. Let the king confiscate the whole property of those officials who, evil-minded, may take money from suitors and banish them. So those who take bribes and those who take advantage of the people and don't protect the people. They actually just become like dacoits themselves. Then those people should be removed from the kingdom, banished from the kingdom. Their property is taken, they're banished. You know? Point that we see here is that they have done service in the past, but by the nature of dealing in that service, they may go bad. Therefore, then they're just, their punishment is they're banished from the place, and they are, how you say, and their properties are taken. But any punishment on them is not there. You see also there's nothing, no mark, nothing to say that they've done something wrong. That way they're free to go to another place and do. Because they could take responsibility, they were actually had qualification to do, then there's every possibility that they will understand I've done something wrong and will correct themselves. like that. They're not like someone who's unqualified, therefore they need some corporal punishment or some other kind of more severe punishment. 125. For women employed in the royal service and for menial servants, let him fix a daily maintenance in proportion to their position and to their work. So they'll get facility according to what they do. You know, it's practical. You can do more, you get more. You do less, you get less. So that's just the natural understanding. As someone moves up in the hierarchy, they're going to get more facility than someone lower in the hierarchy. It is natural. Because also, then the higher up they come, the better the qualification. And then, generally that means then the more they will be giving in charity, doing so many things. Plus, they don't want to lose the position, so they're working very hard. Like that. 126. Where's 126? Even though 8.
Any reason for daily maintenance?
Means that they have to daily be maintained. Daily maintenance means it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to get it every day. It just means that they have to have something for their... means daily maintenance here means they're eating, their whatever they need, you know. Their own taking care of themselves. 3, 22, 25. Says here, one pana must be given daily as wages to the lowest, 6 to the highest. Likewise, clothing every 6 months, and one drona of grain every month. It doesn't say here what those amounts are. One pana, one drona, 4 adhikas, or 52 palas. Yeah, I have to look and see what that is. In other words, they're given wages, means the highest is 6 times that of the lowest, and then in the middle means 3 times, like that. So you won't necessarily get, you know, the highest paid guy is getting $100 million. You know, it's like, it's a little bit more balance in the system. Especially for the king, they're working for the government, so the government's working by tax. So therefore they can't get big too much because it's too much burden on the people. So it's sufficient for them, and the bigger they get, the more they have. But at the same time, it's not too much of a burden on the state. 127. Having well considered the rates of purchase and of sale, the length of the road, the expense for food and condiments, the charges of securing the goods, let the king make the traders pay duty. So in other words, how much it has to be fair, how much they're having to do, they themselves, whatever they have to do, then there should be some duty. They're coming through the kingdom or different things like that. They brought it in for other places. It says, net profits. It says, charges for securing the goods against robbers. Yeah, charges of securing the goods means just whatever it took to protect them. So the king must consider and then very fairly then charge from the business people. He can't overcharge. He has to be, you know, they have to make their profit. Otherwise they won't be inspired. But at the same time, it must be a balanced amount. 128. After due consideration, the king shall always fix in his realm the duties and taxes in such a manner that both he himself and the man who does the work receive their due reward. Yeah. The king can't take too less because he has so many things he has to maintain in the kingdom. And he can't take too much, otherwise the man doing the business, he doesn't feel inspired. 129. As the leech, the calf, and the bee take their food little by little, even so must the king draw from his realm moderate annual taxes. A 15th part of the increments on cattle and gold may be taken by the king, and the 8th, 6th, or 12th part on the crops. So, yeah, so these are the amount of tax you can take. So generally, the king will take the lowest if everything's going nicely. But if there's some problem, or there is some need like war, or there's some problem and they foresee that there'll be some problem in the future for protection of the people, then they may take more. But generally, with the amount that he takes, 6th, 8th, or 12th, then whatever it may be, then also with that he takes the good qualities, the bad qualities of the people. Whatever's the tax, that much of the bad qualities of the people will be taken. Same time, not much of the good qualities will be taken. Does that make some sense? It means if he's protecting the people, he gets 1/6 of their pious activities. Like that. But he also then will take part of their reactions. And if he doesn't protect them, then he'll take their whole reactions. 131. He may also take the 6th part of trees, honey, clarified butter, perfumes, medicinal herbs, substances used for flavoring food, flowers, roots, and fruit. Of leaves, pot herbs, grass, objects made of cane, skins, of earthen vessels, and all articles made of stone. So he can take a 6th of those. Though crops may be 8, 6, or 12. And gold and cattle will be a 15th. 133. Though dying with want, a king must not levy a tax on kshatriyas, and no kshatriya residing in his kingdom must perish from hunger. The kingdom of that king who in whose dominion a kshatriya pines with hunger will even ere long be afflicted by famine. Yeah, so that means the kshatriyas, means the qualified brahmanas who can actually perform the duties, that they should not, he should never tax them, and he should always see that they never go hungry, because if such a person goes hungry, then there'll be a famine in the kingdom. That. So they have to be very, very careful. Verse 135. Having ascertained his learning in the Veda and the purity of his conduct, the king shall provide for him means of subsistence in accordance with the sacred law, and shall protect him in every way as a father protects the lawful son of his body. So this is also according to his learning and his position and everything. There's not much learning unless there's more learning than more, because generally the ones who have more, they generally have more students. Those who have less students. So whatever they'll get more, they're not going to use more for themselves. They're going to use it for taking care of their students, maintaining the students. Because then this way, then the kingdom prospers, because then they get more and more trained people. So the king should always be on the lookout to see that the qualified persons are maintained and they are... maintaining others. 136. Whatever meritorious act such a brahmana performs under the full protection of the king, thereby the king's length of life, wealth, and kingdom increase. So because of the protection, then the king himself, his length of life, wealth, and kingdom, all that will expand if he protects the brahmins. Let the king make the common inhabitants of his realm who live by traffic pay annual some trifle, which is called a tax. 137, common hands, small dealers and vessels. So that means, here it says, at least in notes, that this means those who are really small, you know, like the little people that have a little basket of vegetables, this, that, and all that kind of stuff. They should pay, it says here, some very small, trifle, just something, which is called a tax. But it's just something just so that they're doing something. They're not just thinking they're getting away and just doing whatever they please. But some small, very small, insignificant tax that's not going to bother them. Like that. 138. Mechanics and artisans, as well as shudras who subsist by manual labor, he may cause to work for himself one day in each month. That's interesting. He doesn't take tax, but they just have to do one day's work. He says he may cause. Like that. But not necessarily. It means if his need is there, then maximum one day in a month, he can get them to work for free. And the other time, they must be working for whoever they're working for. 139. Let him not cut up his own root by levying no taxes, nor the root of other men by excessive greed. For by cutting up his own root or theirs, he makes himself or them wretched. So here is always the balance. See, the law is always balanced. It has some strong point one way, but it has an equally strong, if not stronger, point the other way. So he can't not tax, otherwise how he as a king will function. And he can't levy too much tax, otherwise how will his people function? 140. Let the king, having carefully considered each affair, be both sharp and gentle. For a king who is both sharp and gentle is highly respected. Is that when someone is gentle, everybody respects that. But if they're not intelligent, then they're a nice person. But if they're gentle and they're intelligent, they can see things very nicely, very clever, that then is very much respected. Otherwise, you get very clever people who are not gentle, and everybody likes to stay out of their way. And gentle people who are not clever, everyone, you know, appreciates them, but no one wants to work with them, you know, in serious, like in business or management, like that. You know, they're people you sit and talk with and be nice with and like that, socialize with. But someone who is both gentle and clever and sharp like that, that is very much appreciated. Like that. It says, highly respected. 141. When he is tired with the inspection of the business of men, let him place on that seat of justice his chief minister, who must be acquainted with the law, wise, self-controlled, and descended from a noble family. So it's like, if he is tired from dealing with all the day-to-day management and judging of the people and seeing that everything's going properly, then he can then have the prime minister do that. But that prime minister must be very acquainted and qualified himself. He can't be not qualified. 142. Having thus arranged all the affairs of his government, he shall zealously and carefully protect subjects. Right, so this is the important element of the king. Having arranged all the affairs of his government, he shall zealously and carefully protect the subjects. This is the point here that makes the difference between the landlord and the king. The king makes all this arrangement, so then he can peacefully protect his mind is peaceful, and now I have arranged for the protection of my people. While the landlord will have nicely made all these arrangements, so he can then zealously and tirelessly and carefully collect taxes. Right? Because to them, the tax is the goal. You protect the people to get the tax. Well, the king takes the tax to protect the people. Right? That's the reason. 'Okay, so now we'll get into that's the management. In other words, we've just discussed now the whole administration of the kingdom, how it works, qualifications of the people, how he must have double checking through direct inspection, through spies, you know, and none of the officials and everything should be get out of hand. At the same time, they're taken care of very nicely, and the common people, they are paying their taxes. So now in the protection, then now there'll be some discussion. that monarch whose subjects are carried off by robbers from his kingdom, while they loudly call for help, and he and his servants are quietly looking on, is a dead and not a living king. So a king who can't protect his citizens. You know, the dacoits are doing so many things and crying for protection, and he doesn't protect them. They're not alive. They're dead. You know, this like means they're not actually a king. They can't be counted as a king. The highest 144. The highest duty of a kshatriya is to protect his subjects, for the king who enjoys the rewards just mentioned is bound to discharge that duty. He's taking their tax, so he must protect. 145. Having risen in the last watch of the night, having performed the rite of personal purification, having with a collected mind offered oblations in the fire, and having worshipped brahmanas, he shall enter the hall of audience, which possesses the marks considered auspicious for a dwelling. So we see here, he's gotten up in the early morning, Brahma Muhurta, last watch of the night, so that watch is 3 hours long. So generally it's some time before the sun has risen. He gets up, his personal purification, he takes his bath. Then, with a collected mind, he offers oblations in the fire. In other words, he does the, you know, whatever sacrifice is proper for the age. So now it means he chants his rounds. Having worshipped Brahmins, having respected the senior person devotees, he shall enter the hall of audience. Means the place where he will now meet the people. This is court. He'll enter the court where people can come and see him. So this is all done quite early in the day, so people can come. 146. And it says, possessing the marks considered auspicious. The place must be very pleasant to look at. It must be very nice, have all auspicious things, because you want auspiciousness to come out of it. So it should look very nice. It should be, you know, it shouldn't be just very bare and not, you know, very annoying. It should be a very pleasant place. You know, powerful and royal and all that, but all auspicious and everything, that people will be, will inspire, you know, inspire that justice will happen nicely. 146. Tarrying there, he shall gratify all subjects who come to see him by a kind reception, and afterwards dismiss them. Having dismissed his subjects, he shall take counsel with his ministers. So he will receive them. It means he won't just ignore them. He will receive them. It means each one who comes personally will be received. And then after he's finished, then he will dismiss them personally. Then after that, he will discuss with his ministers. So if there's something he says, I will take care of this, don't worry. Someone comes and says, yes, dacoits are coming here and there. And that, and then he'll say, yes, we will take care. Don't you worry, we'll take care of it. So you can go now. Right, so that person will be very happy. He'll go, and he knows that the king is going to do something. So then, he will discuss with the ministers what he will do, how they will protect, how they will do, what is their advice on how to protect such people. Right, citizen has a problem. How they will solve the problem. So on his own, he will make his decisions. With the counsel from the ministers. Decision is his, because responsibility is his. He can't say, well, the minister said. No. Minister said, but he took the advice or rejected the advice. So he has to take the full responsibility. 147. Ascending the back of a hill or a terrace, and retiring there in a lonely place, or in a solitary forest, let him consult with them unobserved. So there should be some places where he can go. No one sees, no one hears, there's no spies. And let him then consult with them as to what will be done, this and that, so that nobody knows. Otherwise, then there may see the other kings, you know, bad people, that they're also putting their spies out and trying to find out what's going on. So he must go to places where they won't be. Because that way then you know. If something does go wrong, it's from your ministers. And if nothing's going wrong, and if the ministers are all okay, then, you know, there's some other reasons. You can trust them. Right. 148. That king whose secret plans other people, though assembled for the purpose, do not discover, will enjoy the whole world, though he be poor in treasure. Yeah. So in other words, those people who come to find out. Yeah, here it says in the note, free from grass and so forth, means you can see what's around you. You may have grass and you're sitting there, but there may be somebody close in the grass. Genghis Khan used to say that discussing in a tent is not private. Private means you get on your horse and ride out into the middle of a field where you can see in all directions and you discuss there. People may be able to see you, but no one can hear what you're saying. That's private. Like that. Well, he says in the houses this and that, then people hear. Tents have ears. Like that. So, speak more loudly.
Japanese used to make this. They make an open field. They sit down in the middle, and then they make a floor. Floating, they make a little port, and it's about 100 meters or 300 meters, so that no one can hear if he's outside.
Yeah. There's some way they must go to a solitary place and take that counsel. Like that. That way also, if it's solitary, those who want to give some advice can give very nicely. Because it's private, so they can speak their mind. They're not in public. Another aspect, this is also what before, is he must choose himself. In other words, who's the leader chooses who works with him, his ministers. Like that. Because he has to work with them. They have to be able to get along. They have to be able to think in the same way. Otherwise, how he will get things done. If others impose, no, this one has to be there, that one has to, and he can't work with them, what's the use? Someone maybe suggests, but he has to be able to work with them. Yeah. So then these secret plans, if other people who have come to find out those plans and the king, they're still not able to discover, then that king is very, very prosperous. Like that. He will be very happy. Because whatever his situation is, he'll be respected. Right? If another kingdom can't find out what that king is doing, then there's some respect there. Because they think that something really must be going on there, so they don't bother. Right? So it says that even though he is poor in treasure, but if they can't find out he's poor in treasure, they can't find out anything of his weaknesses, what's going on in that, then they'll naturally suspect that he has such a well-organized system that nobody can find out what he's doing, then how much more organized must be his armies and everything else. So they'll naturally, he will live peacefully. 149. At the time of consultation, let him cause to be removed idiots, the dumb, the blind, and the deaf, animals, very aged men, women, barbarians, the sick, and those deficient in limbs. Because all those that we've just mentioned, those are exactly the people you picked for spies. Right? Old men walking by, you know, no one notices him, or the blind man going around. The deaf, it says, remove the deaf. You know, they're supposed to be deaf, but generally if they're hanging around kings, they're not so deaf. They're amazingly, you know, like that. 150. Because all these idiots, the dumb, those who can't speak, those who act crazy, but many times they just do that because they're spies. You know? It's just part of the game. Hunchbacks, yes. Hunchbacks are very good. The sons of prostitutes. You know, these kind of people are very good at slinking around, moving around, finding out, hearing everything. Because these kind of people are totally into prajalpa. So they're very expert at being able to find it, hear it, you know, give it to others, 150. Such despicable persons, likewise animals, they betray secret counsel. For that reason, he must be careful with respect to them. So here he also must even be careful of the women in the palace, his own, the queen, her maidservants, especially the maidservants. Because they're around, they're doing service, they'll talk. One maidservant will talk to another maidservant, and this way then things will go. And people know that the maidservants like to talk. So they'll have spies that are hearing, what are the maidservants talking about? So you must be very careful that in the palace that there'll be so many also maidservants around and other servants who are taking care of the palace and, you know, doing things, lighting lamps and cleaning and this and that. When he's taking the private counsel, none of them can be around. 151. At midday or at midnight, when his mental and bodily fatigues are over, let him deliberate either with himself alone or with his ministers on virtue, pleasure, and wealth. On reconciling the attainment of these aims which are opposed to each other, on bestowing his daughters in marriage, and on keeping his sons from harm. Virtue, pleasure, and wealth, says here, on reconciling the attainment of these aims which are opposed to each other. So, attaining pleasure and wealth, you know, or pleasure and wealth means you have to give up pleasure to get the wealth, or sometimes virtue must be given up to get the pleasure or wealth, or, you know, to keep the wealth and no pleasure, you know, so he says you must discuss the balance of all this, like that. Yeah. Yes. 153. On sending ambassadors, on the completion of undertakings already begun, on the behavior of the women in the palace, and on the doings of a spy. So all these things will be discussed with the ministers. 154. On the whole eightfold businesses and the five classes of spies, on the goodwill or enmity and the conduct of the circle of neighbors, he must carefully reflect. Goodwill or enmity of the neighbors means the neighboring kingdoms, the kings and the peoples of those states. How what is their mood? How their do they have to worry? Their goodwill, how good is it? You know, their enmity, what is the nature of that? Is it a threat? Is it not? So you should, in other words, you must be always on top of everything, what's going on. The system of spies, what they're collecting, and that they're doing their job properly. All these different things they must take care of. 155, more of his considerations. On the conduct of the middlemost prince, and on the doings of him who seeks conquest, on the behavior of the neutral king, and on that of the foe, let him constantly meditate. So here the eightfold businesses. These are some of the lists. Either conciliation, division, employment of force, gifts agriculture, trade, building bridges and embankments, building fortresses or repairing them, catching elephants, digging mines, settling desert districts, cutting down forests. Or of collecting revenue, expenditure, dismissing bad servants, prohibiting bad conduct on the part of the varnas and ashrams, deciding difficult points in one's own affairs, deciding legal cases, punishing and imposing penances. Five classes of spies. What is it? Karpatika. not sure what that is. A pilgrim, a rogue, an ascetic who has violated his vows, a distressed agriculturalist, a decayed merchant, and a fictitious devotee. Seems to be various kinds of spies that they would use. The middlemost prince. It says the middlemost prince is the king whose territory lies between that of a king seeking conquest and that of his foe, and who, though unable to resist both, may become dangerous to them when they are at war with each other. So then, yeah, just have to watch the guy in the middle when it says neutral kings like that, because you don't know which way they'll go. Neutral king can go either way. So there's, they're for or against you, it's easier. You know where they are, but if they're neutral, it's very hard to tell. 156. These four constituents, Prakriti, briefly speaking, the foundation of the circle of neighbors, besides eight others, are enumerated in the Institutes of Polity, and thus the total is declared to be 12. So these are in front, beyond the foe's territory, a friend, the foe's friend, the friend's friend, the foe's friend's friend, and that's beyond. Then in the rear, he who attacks in the rear, he who restrains the latter. Then the supporters of those two. Yeah, okay. So these are all the things you... foe's friend, foe's friend's friend. Because if you can get any one of them, then you can mess up the whole system. One 157. The minister, the kingdom, the fortress, the treasury, and the army are five other constituent elements of the circle. For these are mentioned in connection with each of the first 12. Thus the whole circle consists, briefly speaking, of 72 constituent parts. So that means there's all these other things that were mentioned before. Eightfold businesses, five classes of spies, the conduct of the neighbors, all these different things. So adding all that up, he's got 72 parts to always be thinking about, and this is what he discusses with his ministers. 158. Let the king consider as hostile his immediate neighbor and the partisan of such a foe as friendly the immediate neighbor of his foe, and as neutral the king beyond these two. Oh, I see. So his immediate neighbor and that neighbor's friend is foe. And whoever is the enemy of his immediate neighbor is his friend. And as neutral the king beyond those two. Whoever is outside that and on the other side of them, because they're too far away. But whoever is just around him in the kingdoms, then if he's next to him, he just automatically takes it that he's maybe inimical, unless he's proven himself otherwise. But otherwise, that's the natural position that's taken. And anyone who's known as to be inimical to that person you take as friend. Because you know then you can work together against that one enemy. One 159. Let him overcome all of them by means of the four expedients, conciliation and the rest, employing either singly or conjointly, or by bravery and policy alone. Like that. So he can also just by his you know, his dealings and all that keep everything very nice. Let him constantly think of the six measures of royal policy: alliance, war, marching, halting, dividing the army, and seeking protection. Having carefully considered the business in hand, let him resort to sitting quiet or marching. Oh, I see. Having fully carefully considered the business at hand, let him resort to sitting quietly or marching, alliance or war, dividing his forces or seeking protection, as the case may require. So after seeing everything what's going on, then he will decide what he will do. In other words, he must be very observant of what's going on around him. And based on that, then he can make a decision on what he should do. 162. But the king must know that there are two kinds of alliances and of wars, likewise two of both marching and sitting quiet, and two occasions for seeking protection. An alliance which yields present and future advantages, one must know to be of two descriptions, namely, that when one marches together with an ally, and the contrary, when the allies act separately. War is declared to be of two kinds, namely, that which is undertaken in season or out of season, by oneself for one's own purposes, and that waged to avenge an injury done to a friend. Marching to attack is said to be twofold, namely, that undertaken by one alone when an urgent matter has suddenly arisen, and that undertaken by one allied with a friend. Sitting quiet is stated to be of two kinds, namely that incumbent on one who has gradually been weakened by fate or in consequence of former acts, and that in favor of a friend. 167. If the army stops in one place and its master in another in order to effect some purpose, that is called by those acquainted with the virtues of the measures of royal policy the twofold divisions of the forces. Seeking refuge is declared to be of two kinds. First, for the purpose of attaining an advantage when one is harassed by enemies. Secondly, in order to become known among the virtuous as the protege of a powerful king. So here is that one is working under, taking shelter, means that you will take shelter of someone more powerful, either for one's own protection, because one is smaller and one cannot properly protect himself, or to be known as those who are under a powerful king, a prestigious king. You know, like those who wanted to come and fight for Yudhishthir, then they're thinking, we want to be under this powerful king. You know, we want to fight with him, then we are known as virtuous. We fought with Yudhishthir on Yudhishthir's side. He is the most virtuous. So naturally then, we will also be known as virtuous, having taken his side. So they wouldn't want to take sides with Duryodhana, because he's not virtuous. When the king knows that some future time his superiority is certain, and that at the time present he will suffer little injury, then let him have recourse to peaceful measures. Means if with very minimal disturbance one can gain, you know, things will go on, then one should resort to peace. Right? The disturbance will be less, and after that then everything will be proper. Then better use the method of peace. 170. But when he thinks all his subjects to be exceedingly contented, and that he himself is most exalted in power, let him make war. when he knows his own army to be cheerful in disposition and strong, and that of his enemy the reverse, then let him march against his foe. So when his army is feeling strong and the other's army is not, that's the time to someone who has been established as an enemy, that is when one must, go against them to remove the difficulties that are there from their being inimical. See, the problem is the king, he has a kingdom full of people, and when those people feel threatened by the next king because the next king wants to come and take the land or do something like that, then he must be always waiting for to see that that doesn't happen, and if there's an opportunity, then he attacks first. Like that. So, and this is, his people are happy. He is in a very powerful position. At that time only, you can make war. The people aren't satisfied. He's not very powerful. That's not a good time for war. But if he is very weak in chariots and beasts of burden and in troops, then let him carefully sit quiet, gradually conciliating his foes. When the king knows the enemy to be stronger in every respect, then let him divide his army and thus achieve his purpose. But when he is very easily assailable by the forces of the enemy, let him quickly seek refuge with a righteous, powerful king. Right? There's also a righteous, powerful king. Why a righteous, powerful king? It says here, it doesn't just say a powerful, but a righteous, powerful king. Because that righteous, powerful king will give protection himself. You take shelter of him, he will protect. And he won't take advantage of levying too heavy of taxes. He's not going to try to take over your kingdom. He will respect the king for what he is. So then things will go peacefully. So it should be a virtuous king, righteous king. That prince who will coerce both his disloyal subjects and the army of the foe, let him ever serve with every effort like a guru. When, even in that condition, he sees that evil is caused by such protection, let him without hesitation have recourse to war. By all the four expedients, a politic prince must arrange matters so that neither friends, nor neutrals, nor foes are superior to him. Let him fully consider the future and the immediate results of all undertakings, and the good and bad sides of all past actions. So he must see whatever plans he's done, what will be the results, and balance all that. See that it's going to be proper. And he must see whatever has happened in the past, you know, that has given some unpleasant or improper reaction. He must always contemplate that to understand what should not be done. So based on any mistakes, he knows how to correct himself. So he should always be very, very open to that, very careful. One has to be practical to see what has been happening in the past, what's been the result. He who knows the good and evil which will result from his acts in the future is quick in forming resolutions for the present and understands the consequences of past actions will not be conquered. So in other words, one who knows properly the behavior and deeds and what gives what reactions and all that, then it's very easy for him to make decisions on what to do. Someone who doesn't is very difficult. In other words, they don't have knowledge of what is proper and improper action and how to proceed, then they're not going to, then there's going to be difficulty for them. He must know this. Otherwise, So there must be training. 180. Let him arrange everything in such a manner that no ally, no neutral, or foe may injure him. That is the sum of political wisdom. Yeah, in other words, no ally, no neutral, or foe may injure him. If you can do that, that is the essence of all the political wisdom. But if the king undertakes an expedition against a hostile kingdom, then let him gradually advance in the following manner against his foe's capital. Okay. Are there any questions up to now? Because this will get into more details of how war is waged. Okay. So then we'll end here. And then we should try to keep it more close to starting correctly at 5, then we'll get in the proper amount of time. Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.